Welcome back to Beholder to No One, a D&D podcast, where today I'm here with Alex. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
For those who don't know, Alex will be our DM / storyteller for the Vampire the Masquerade game that we are starting in Dice Before Dawn, where our topic is actually fairly hitting right on the nail of consequences and how in TTRPGs sometimes there are consequences for your actions, and not every DM necessarily plays with those rules, but honestly it makes things so much more entertaining.
That it does. It can add a lot more to your story and makes the night much more interesting in some situations.
Yes. Now, in D&D specifically, a lot of people are like, oh, I start a fight in the tavern and then nothing happens. Mm-hmm. Why didn't they get kicked out? Now they don't have a place to sleep. Like, why aren't they arrested for something? Like, there should be slight consequences. But in other games, like Vampire, Delta Green, Call of Cthulhu, Shadowrun, Mech Warrior, any of those types of games, if you do something stupid, there are going to be consequences for your actions up to death.
Mm-hmm.
And you play a lot of those types of games that have a lot of consequences, so that's why you're the perfect person to talk about this.
Yeah, and I mean, it's something that can be added really to any game. The best way that I always think about it with having a consequence in a game that seems logical is put myself in the shoes of one of the NPCs, and see what would the most logical reaction to the situation be? And also having those NPCs have a life outside of what the party does. Taking those things into mind really adds a lot to your ability to add in those story elements, because you don't want your NPCs just to be asleep while the party's not interacting with them.
Right. And there's also like certain stories where there could be things that are like triggers for a NPC specifically, depending on what their history is. For example, in Deadlands, when we played Savage Worlds, there was a character who had lost their wife. So if you mention, like, in that type of situation, if you mentioned love or mentioned their wife or spouse or significant other or anything like that, it could trigger him to start crying. And that's just like a little added thing that could make them less likely to talk to you, maybe, because you're upsetting them, even if it's unintentional. And if you like push, if you're a paladin and you push religion on an atheist, the consequence could be they are less trusting of that party and like, fuck you, I'm not going to help you. I know that in our Delta Green episode, there were a couple of times where consequences could have happened if this was like a long-term game, and we talked about this off of recording. For those who haven't watched the Delta Green episode, please go watch it, because slight spoilers. But there was one part particularly where a little old lady was watching us with her dog, and she was like super suspicious of us. And then the one player decided to go and interact with her specifically. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I would have just called the cops on you. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's something that doesn't really lend itself as much to one-shot scenarios, just because you're trying to get everybody through the story and all this other cool stuff so that they can interact and find the spooky thing. But realistically, like I was saying before, if you make your world alive and make your NPCs act like actual people, most likely if old lady had seen a group of strangers looking around for a deceased person, she might have already called the authorities, depending on how skittish she is, especially if somebody was to come up and talk to her. That would 100% happen. And the thing is, that doesn't have to be like a game-ending consequence. The only reason I avoid it is because really we just had a timetable to keep to. But if we didn't have that, then we could have had the opportunity for the police to arrive. The players have to figure out a way to bureaucracy their way out of getting arrested. Or maybe one of them does get arrested, and then they have to go and deal with that. And then meanwhile, maybe something else is happening in the background with the thing that they were supposed to take care of. There's a lot you can add to the story to make it unfold and make it feel much more natural, which I think is the main thing that you want to really portray when you're trying to add consequence in your game, is make things seem more natural, make the characters alive, just so that their reactions don't blindside people. But also it makes it so you can add a lot more story. You could even include the character's backstory in that too. Like maybe they're on the run and maybe they do something that makes it so they're seen. And so as a byproduct, maybe somebody shows up looking for them because they heard about them being in this area or whatever else.
Yeah, exactly. I understand that for the one shot specific, that it was already a long game and it was already very late by the time we ended. So I appreciate that we didn't go that route because we would not have ended. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's 1 a.m. I need to go to bed, for the love of gods, end it by the end of the game. And it wasn't because I wasn't having fun. I was just like super tired. It was like a weekday.
Yeah.
But it would have been interesting if that was a long-term game to see like where that would have ended. And then there was a later scene in part two where I shouldn't have, because it was like prolonging the game a little bit more, but I couldn't just stand by when the one character, I think it was the same character, pulled a gun on the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, put the fucking gun down now, for the love of God. Like, what are you doing? We are a party. And it didn't make sense to me at the time either, but like pulling a gun on your coworkers, never a good idea. Never. No. A good idea. Like, you would not be worked with ever again, pretty much. Or nobody. No. Would want to work. I would never want to work with that player, that character again, because they are untrustworthy in stressful situations.
Yeah. And I think that distinction for how to act in the game really comes down to your interpretation with your party. I think that in your session zero, if you sit down and discuss with people and say, hey, the world that we're going to be in is living and breathing. This isn't going to be a Saturday morning cartoon game, which those are fine too, if that's what you want to do. But it doesn't always have to be that way. You can make it where the world is much more alive if you want to. Or you can have a game where things are a little bit more cut and dry. It really just comes down to however your players feel about playing in it. Because if they're not going to have a good time with the fact that they've done something that's caused a domino effect of something else, then probably avoid it.
Actually, in my Friday game, there was a lot of things that led up to a consequence that we didn't anticipate. And as it was unfolding, we're like, oh, fuck, we caused all of this.
Mm-hmm.
What? Really? Fuck. And it was just like little tiny things over time. So the first thing was like, we had a player in the party who ended up leaving the game shortly after this due to party conflict. But the character was strictly tied to my character and this NPC. And that character was slowly losing control of themselves. I don't really understand why, but eventually they turned on a party member, so we killed him because he killed one of our party members. And we brought him to this NPC to explain the situation, and we're like, we're sorry, we tried, but we had to kill him. He was trying to kill us, and he did succeed at killing one person. And that person was distraught. She was devastated, she was upset, she was just pissed off. That is what triggered a long line of other things. And then like later in an unrelated scene, we mentioned something about kyber crystals, and then later in another scene I mentioned my tattoo artist having a vision about rakshasas because I thought it was important to keep an eye out on it, and I mentioned it to her, even though like, because our logic at the time was, I don't trust you, but you have the means to get things done. Mm-hmm. So I think if you know, then you could possibly figure out a way to help keep things safe. All of these things led to her researching kyber crystals, which led her to research becoming more interested in the person the dragon that made them. And then her basically assigning someone to take care of the tattoo artist in the sense of drugging her to be complacent and making her tattoo all of her employees with the cyber crystal, their kyber crystals. Mm-hmm. And then when it all ended, it ended in this uproarious destruction. And we realized that because we mentioned the tattoo artist and the kyber crystals, and because of the death of that person, she destroyed all of the houses of Eberron, all the Dragonmark houses, and those tattoos that were forced upon all of the patrons that worked for her drained the life of all of her employees to give her more power. And it was just like this whole extreme situation that led up to this one point of time where we were just like, oh, we're going to blow up this one family and we'll be done. What the fuck is happening? What do you mean there's more explosions? No, there's only one explosion. What do you mean there's like 15? What? And it just went into this extreme situation. And we realized that because we weren't conscientious of what we were saying to whom we were saying it to, that led to this absurd consequence where thousands and thousands of people lost their lives because of it, because of one man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, fuck, this is our fault, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously we didn't pull the trigger, but like, we led the breadcrumbs.
Yeah. And I mean, that really comes down to the basis of it, is you want to make these, and it sounds like that's what your particular game master did, is they wanted to make these story elements kind of fit in a way that made logical sense. And you can do those grand scale cause and effects, even the same as you can do the smaller scale cause and effects, which lead to more things and lead to more things and lead to more things. And there's all sorts of options available to you. It really just comes down to what you are comfortable with, what your players are comfortable with, and what you think would be a good story.
Yeah, I like when it happens instantly, but I also like the side stuff, because there's things happening behind the scenes that you don't really know about. Like, you don't know how your actions affected somebody specifically, but there have been games where, like, the consequence is instantaneous, and you are like, oh, well, fuck. And it's even as simple as a player trying to save the rest of the party, and the consequence is their death. Because they lead the person off pretending to have the item, which is what happened in our Dragon Heist game. They tricked the big bad to think that they still had the item, and they went deeper into the house where the rest of us escaped with the actual item. And then that person died.
Mm-hmm.
So the consequences of that was his death, and then we didn't know about it, and then another NPC he came back, and we didn't realize he did die. It was very confusing. He was a simulacrum, basically, which had its own consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious about the vampire and masquerade one, because I've been watching LA by Night, as you know, a lot, and I'm up through season 3 on the epilogues currently, and there's 4 seasons, so I'm almost finished with season 3, and then I have to do 4. But there are a lot of situations where there are consequences, but maybe not as bad as they could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some of them get away with a lot. For no reason whatsoever. But then there are some consequences, like when somebody mentions that they're the son of blah blah blah, the consequences is they get kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about how that's going to work in our game, because there are things that I'm sure each of us have that if somebody found out, the consequence would be not great.
Yeah, I mean,
I have 2 for just my character that I'm not going to mention, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it mostly comes down to, in LA by Night, they picked and chose their consequences based upon their story that they were trying to tell. Also, the characters in LA by Night are very powerful, so the likelihood that they would be called out for any sort of mistake that they make is pretty slim in a lot of situations. For our particular game, really the world itself does have an overarching story, does have an overarching plot, but there's a lot that's left open because at the end of the day, there's so many things that people can do and people can say that could lead to other consequences, lead to other situations. And the whole thing for that is that we, in Vampire especially, you exist in the modern world. Well, in our particular game, you'll exist a couple of years in the future, but you will exist in the modern world. You will have to interact with the same things that we do on a day-to-day basis. So people are going to have camera phones. People are going to have access to social media. People are going to be very suspicious of you if you're walking around and doing something that looks like you shouldn't be doing, or just people be suspicious of you in general. So it really comes down to what makes the most sense for your game and what makes the most sense for your party. And then from there, you can kind of build how you want your party to interact with things. I would say don't hit them for every little thing. Like if they're speeding, maybe they don't get pulled over or whatever else like that. But there's a lot that can add to your story and make it interesting, and also gives you the opportunity for some of your characters to be cool. Because there's some things that characters have in a lot of games that may not get touched, like a particular stat or a specialty or something like that. Maybe they're more socially heavy skills. Adding a cause and effect situation like that means that you can kind of have one of those characters flex their skills and things like that. Like in the situation of Delta Green, when the police had shown up, we had some characters who had a high bureaucracy score. And bureaucracy in that game allows you to kind of navigate those situations that you have with other bureaucratic elements of the government. So by that, they would have been able to kind of feel cool, talk their way out of it. And, you know, it just comes down to what you want your story to be and making sure everybody has a good time.
Or like in Vampire, I can use etiquette to know how to properly speak to a higher up vampire in a situation like that.
Exactly.
I could be like, okay, what's the appropriate way to deal with this etiquette role?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, that's probably going to come up a lot because for just lore purposes, as much as we adhere to them, vampires are pretty stuck-up characters most of the time. So, and in some situations where they're really old, they may not really have much of a semblance of social contract or anything else like that because they're so old. The world has progressed beyond their, you know, what they remember of it. So they may not be able to interact with you in the same way that somebody would from this time period would. Having those in-game elements like etiquette makes it so you have a little bit more know-how than you personally may have on how to deal with a much older vampire or a very powerful character or anything else like that.
Right. I know that I kept making jokes about how I was like, I'm going to become the prince one day. And you're like, no, you'll die. But I was like, I'm joking, probably.
Yeah, I think that's just comes largely due to the fact that I do enjoy making my worlds living, breathing, and logical. So a situation where somebody, I mean, you could, I'm not going to say you can't. But if you just try to at face do something, it would be much more difficult for you. And in the case of games like Vampire, you have these political elements and these social elements to make it so that the vampires don't just kill you. Right. So you're dealing with forces that are extremely powerful right out of the gate. And I think that that's one of the things that is prevalent through World of Darkness in general, is that you have these characters and these creatures that are extremely powerful, that you could not toe-to-toe with them. Even like in the case of a werewolf, most of the party isn't going to be able to toe-to-toe with them for a very long time by themselves. And it just comes down to what makes sense. What are you going to do? Like, also giving your character, your players, some idea of the expectations is a good idea too. That makes it so that they avoid situations where they just face check something and then do something that would be completely illogical, or maybe they just do it just to see what'll happen. And you know, you as a storyteller or GM makes you can do whatever you feel is the most logical outcome of their action.
Yeah, I think the first game really that I had to deal with consequences, and I've brought this up before, but this is Shadowrun, which Bill would probably be the only other person that I think could be really good on this conversation and related to consequences. But our actions in that game had consequences, whether we intended them to or not. So, for example, the scene where I was trying desperately to get a sniper to stop shooting, and I hacked into the apartment building that he was in, and I was asked, do you want to hack the fire suppression or the sprinklers? Now, my brain at the moment was just like, oh my god, we need to stop shooting. I guess suppression, because like the sprinklers, I'm like, what is water gonna do? Just, I guess suppression, sure, we'll hack that. And the consequence of that action, of not taking the moment to think about it, was the loss of innocent lives.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fire suppression system is like a foam that just fills completely to stop the fire instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Anything in that suppression isn't gonna survive.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wait, what? What do you mean that? What do you mean there was people in there? Like, he's like, it's an apartment building. I'm like, shit, that's not what I meant to do.
Yeah, that is one of those real life scenarios. And I mean, I don't remember if Shadowrun has this in it, but like in Vampire, in that particular situation, it could be you could take a stain to your humanity or something like that, because the consequence that you may experience may not just be guilt. It may also be the fact that your character has a thing where it says that they won't kill innocent people, and then they just did that.
Yeah, at the time we were playing like a D20 version of it, so my alignment had changed. It had shifted slightly, which isn't normal for, I don't think that's normal for normal Shadowrun with like the D6 system. But I know that if you break enough contracts, then you could just be dubbed as not trustworthy. I know that they have heat systems where you can't just do one thing after the other. You have to let things cool down, because if you take one task after the other without a break in between, you gather up basically heat, which means people are noticing you. And the more heat you have, the riskier the situation is. And we learned that the hard way too, because we weren't taking those breaks. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, okay, we do a quest or a job or whatever it's called, and then we take 3 weeks off, and then we do a job, and then we take 3 weeks off. And that's how it should have been. Instead, it was like, we do a job, a day later we do a job, a day later we do a job.
Yeah.
And we started to get noticed by the wrong people. We started pissing off people. So it's just, it makes sense in a way. And I think that could correlate into any game, depending on the DM's standpoint. I love having consequences in my games. For example, in my Monday game, one of the actions that they had was the player wanted to free the villagers and didn't want to kill. And I said, okay, well, the consequence of that is they want you in exchange. So are you willing to give up your life, unknowing what they want of you, for the life of those two men? The player said yes. And they didn't know when they said yes if they were going to be killed, if they were going to be forced to be servants, or if they were going to be whatever. And I went a different route completely, because I didn't really want to do the whole servitude thing. But and I didn't want the player to like not be involved anymore either. Like, I didn't want to be like, oh, you're out of the game now, make a new character. But it was just interesting, because they're like, of course I want to rescue them. I'll save them if I have to. I'll do whatever it takes. And that mentality too can also get you in trouble, because you're trusting people who could be evil.
Yeah. Yeah, and evil. I think
sorry, go ahead.
No, it's fine. I think I think a lot of games already have systems built in to kind of deal with these sorts of situations to some degree. And that doesn't mean that you necessarily have to lean into them super hard like you did in your D&D game. There are ways that you can have the characters be affected, like character alignments, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do that like in your situation. Also, speaking to like what you were saying, not everything has to be negative. You could do something that leads to something positive. And, you know, there's all sorts of different outcomes to any sort of situation. The players may not even know. So I think playing with kind of both of those sides of the coin makes it really interesting as well.
Well, in that situation specifically, she was not captured in the sense of servitude. She was told, I would like you to learn the ways of our God so that our bloodline doesn't die out. And she agreed. So it was more of a, you take a level in cleric. There were some negative things that happened in relation to that decision, but it wasn't because of her doing that. It was because of her backstory more so. And it's just, it's interesting to see the positives and negatives that could happen. Like if you help somebody, the consequence of helping someone could be that they're willing to help you in the future. If you rescue someone, the consequence is they're willing to praise your name in the future and be a reference or whatever the case may be. But I like having it go both ways too. You build trust with people and then you build distrust, or just like, I don't like the word distrust, but like, I guess it's the best word for it. With other people, doubt. Thank you. Trust and doubt. And you kind of just have to go with the flow of things and see where it takes you. And my favorite types of situations are the ones where you could go the easy route and it won't be the good route necessarily. And then the consequence of that is you're safe, you have more money, you have more magic items, you don't have to worry about certain things, but your morality is kind of tainted. You will not be liked by the people who are being, who are suffering under these people. Or you could go the opposite direction and help the people who are being hurt. And the bonus of that is that you are helping someone get free from their situation. You are helping save a group of people who have been in a situation they shouldn't have been in for a very long time. But the consequence is that you now have an army against you and power against you. So do you take the safe route with the financial bonus, or do you take the more moral route that could lead to your demise?
Yeah, and I think having opportunities to fit those sorts of moral choices in does make things really, really interesting in a lot of games, because it's something I think that a lot more people have started to do, which is make the players make choices that could send the story off in one direction or another while still making it so that the overarching tale is still the same. I think it is something that's beneficial to explore again, provided that everybody is comfortable with doing that, because you may have a party that just doesn't want to have those moral dilemmas, but it just comes down to whatever they want to experience. And I think that having that time to talk with your players beforehand about what you want this to be, what you want to get out of this, is really what you'll use to determine the situations that you put your party into.
Right. Yeah. And I like sometimes when players don't expect consequences and they get away with things for so long, especially in like D&D. D&D is like notorious for your actions don't have consequences, which drives me absolutely up the wall. But there was a game that I was in where another player blew up the person we were talking to right in front of a guard.
Okay.
So the guard, of course, went after her, captured her. She got knocked out. out of character, she got mad that we weren't rescuing her. And we're like, we're not going to say we're with you. Why would we do that? You just blew up a guy. Like, she was nowhere near us. We're like, nope, not with her. Nope, that's, holy cow, who's that crazy person? I don't know. So she got put in the stockades. And that was the consequence. And then she was rescued, but not by us. So we're just like, nope, I think she should stay in the stockades. It's fine. she needs to stew a little bit. So there are consequences of her actions. And she got away with it a little bit in that game. But then in a game that my husband was running, she kept making comments where she like, oh, I jumped down. And he's like, okay, roll me a check. And it was a Starfinder game. And she failed the check. Okay, you take rolls 12 damage. What? Why? You jumped down an elevator shaft.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think was going to happen? Or she like would make comments of like, I lick it. And he's like, okay, roll a constitution save. Wait, why? Because you're licking something random. And I have done that in games too, where someone jokingly will say something like, oh, I cast fireball in the darkness. I'm like, okay, roll for the damage. No, I was kidding. Well, you said it. Are you sure? You sure you're kidding? Because you said it. So,
yeah, and I think that largely comes down to what the players want out of the game. Like, if you have a bunch of players that want to do that narrative heavy thing, then having somebody who is a murder hobo doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But if you want a party that just wants to do a tactical war game veiled as an RPG, then you can 100% do that.
As long as everybody's on the same page.
Exactly.
That would be really. That would be really interesting to do a... Oh, this is bringing back to the game that I wanted to build, the city building game where everybody has their own town.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily like they have their... They have... So everybody has their own city and you're building it up slowly over time and time is increasing significantly faster over time. But you each have a goal in mind, and that goal could be like, I want to take over the other kingdoms and I don't want to be allies, but the goal could be, I want to be allies and be safe. So ultimately somebody could lose and somebody could win. Mm-hmm. But you don't tell the other people what your goals are. So you have this goal underneath, like it's a card, I guess. And you have it face down at all times and you could make allyships, but in actuality, you're going to betray them. But you don't know, and the other players don't know if you're actually wanting to be an ally, if you're going to betray them in the future. But I like the concept of things like that, because it's like, okay, I can trust you because I need your help with this. But if I trust you and I let you get closer, then you risk this. And it could be really interesting. Kind of like Risk-ish game might, but like...
So it sounds... Yeah, it sounds, there are board games that are similar to that in style. There's a game called Diplomacy,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if you've ever played it or heard of it. But in Diplomacy, the game is just your Europe, like all of you are different countries in Europe, and you have armies, and you're trying to conquer the map. But everybody has the same thing, pretty much. Overall, you are balanced. So in order for you to progress, you have to make alliances and stab people in the back and do all these other things. There's a Game of Thrones board game that's much the same way. And mm-hmm. I think that there are some tabletop RPGs that have started to play with that idea, like Dune and the Old Song of Ice and Fire RPG. They just got a new edition, and I am struggling to remember what it's called. I think it's Swords and Sorcery or something like that. But regardless, in that game, you are also building your kingdom up. Granted, you're not going against the other players because you're all working towards the same goal. But I think it could be easily modified. Same thing with Dune. You could be making your own house and trying to build it up and build these trade agreements as well as operate within the world that you exist in.
Yeah, and I like the concept, because you could very easily make it a good or evil type of situation. Like, you could go two different routes. Like, you're all warring against each other, or why don't we just survive? Like, why don't we just all get along and see how big we can get?
Yeah.
And that would be interesting to see the transition between it, but you could also, like, what if one person is like, yeah, we could do that, and then they're just like, backstep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very much something you could do, because, like, I think in a lot of tabletop RPGs, you have the thing where you are all part of the same group and building your things up, like Mech Warrior. I think you can 100% do that, and you could be a freelance group of mechs that's trying to build their civilization somewhere, or build up their reputation, and dealing with maybe they don't have the funding behind them, so maybe all their resources are really sparse, but the thing is that you're all usually in the same group in Mech Warrior.
What you do in that game, because this is what I did in that game, was you have a consort, aka my character, who flirts with a general of the military base and gets free passes for all of her friends onto the military base while she distracts the general, and then the party goes in and steals all the shit.
Yeah, that's an option.
That's what you do, and you make lots of money. And then when he's like ready to, when he's ready to go to town, you're like, oh no, I gotta go to the restroom. Bye. Run away. That actually happened in a Mech Warrior game. It was fantastic. Yeah. I was like, yes, use my body for evil.
That does sound pretty awesome. I personally like Mech Warrior, but I think that the thing that I dislike about it is the bookkeeping. But I mean, that is a big thing. That's a big draw to a lot of people, is that kind of bookkeeping with your mech of like, okay, how, and I mean, heat and things like that are all elements in the game that you have to take into consideration when you're playing. Cause like, you can't just have your mech do all these sorts of cool things. You have to risk management and all these other things. Cause it's very much an RPG that's built on the back of the existing tabletop game. And in the tabletop game, you have a sheet for your mech where you have hit points and you have ammo counts and you have heat count and all this other stuff. Yep. You have armor and all sorts of things.
I like the part where I don't really like the playing with the mechs specifically in the game, which was funny because like I loved the RP focus of it because I kept playing characters that were not really mech pilots. They were just like they were the face characters. So the first character I played, I think she had a mech, but she was like, literally she was a consort, just like Firefly situation. She was just on the ship to go to other places to get money and get clients. Which ironically, after like the first couple of sessions, I'm like, why am I here? I just made more money in 8 hours than I did in this entire 3 weeks that I've been on the ship. Like this makes no sense. But the second character I made when we tried again was I literally hired a pilot for my mech because I didn't want to fly it. Like I didn't want to specifically, but my character didn't want to be part of it. I like the concept of the randomness where it can shoot random body parts and certain things have different consequences. But I've always preferred roleplay, which is weird because I like throwing fights at people as a DM. So I don't know why. Like I'm the complete opposite as a DM, but I don't know. It's whatever. I've gotten better.
I think that largely just comes down to you want to experience something you don't usually get to do, or maybe you had this cool idea that you want to explore and, you know, taking that opportunity to do that. I am much the same way. I don't build very combat heavy characters when I am a player. Typically I make something very interesting and kind of zany, but fun for me to play. I think the best example I can give is I played the Star Wars Edge of the Empire RPG way back in the day when it was still in testing. And the entire party was basically a bunch of Boba Fetts. They're like, we're all going to be bounty hunters. And I didn't want to do that. So I became a droid diplomat. And they would be off doing stuff. And I would be going around trying to spread my robotic religion. And it just really, it just comes down to, again, whatever you and your party are comfortable with doing. And you can have fun and explore those avenues. And it also makes it really fun for the GM if you have characters that do things that are a little bit outside of the box, because it makes it so that they can kind of flex that creative muscle a little bit more and make it so that there are outside elements that take part in your story.
Yeah, that reminds me of the Awfully Queer Heroes game Uncaged Anthology I'm DMing. If y'all haven't listened to it, it is available. The first three episodes, I believe, are out. I'll put the link down below. But there's three rogues and a paladin, and it's their interactions, and they're both trying to trick each other for their own reasons, and it's just really interesting and entertaining to watch it happen, because it's fairly obvious that it's happening, but they're working together still. And it's interesting to see how they react to things and how they deal with situations as they're going, and some of it is in the silliest way possible, but it's also still taken seriously. Mm-hmm. Though I'm pretty sure so many innuendos get cut out. So many innuendos. Just full 20-minute parts of innuendos. I'm just God damn it. But then we're all children or childish, so we're just okay. Stop it. No, seriously, stop, please, for the love of God.
That's what's fun.
Right, yeah. But I think there was one point I was just my face hurts from laughing. Please stop. I can't do it anymore. That happened too when we played we did a one-page mage game. And our characters were not optimized in any way, but all the characters were so fucking funny. They were just so amusing. And I was just having such a blast with it. We're getting off topic with consequences, but I don't care. It was so funny. Go watch that one. Listen to that one too.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's okay. It's quite all right. And I mean, that's really, it kind of comes back to the whole playing a realistic scenario where you have characters that are not optimized. Because really, having flaws can make things more fun. At least God, that's how I view it.
God fucking yes.
Yeah, and I mean, that's also kind of in the same vein of consequence. If you do something and it leads you down a path that you didn't expect, that can kind of be a disadvantage to you, same way as it can having any sort of flaw to your character. And it really adds a lot to the story and allows you to explore a lot. As far as your character's ability to grow, how they interact with the world, everything else like that. But again, this is if you want to.
Yeah, and I like going on the flaw aspect. I absolutely adore flaws. And I love when you not emphasize it to the point where it's obnoxious, but keep it in mind when you're playing the character. And it doesn't have to be something obvious. In D&D specifically, you do not need to necessarily use the flaws they provide you. You can make up one. A perfect example could be if knowledge is presented, you just really, really, really want to read that book. You just really need to read that book. Because what if it's good? What if that's something you didn't know? Yeah. And you have to find a way around it where it doesn't necessarily break up immersion, but then you're just slowly inching over trying to read the book. Even if it's a ledger, you need to know what's in that book.
Yeah. I mean, having those compulsions can really make things very interesting, because in Vampire, that's just straight up a thing that all your characters have, is compulsions that they do and different things. And also in Vampire, you have to have flaws and you make your character. And I think it really does add a lot. For example, we have a character, kind of pulling back the veil in Vampire, who one of their compulsions is if they see a dead body, and this isn't always if they see one, this is just if they fail a particular type of role. If they see a dead body, they have to figure out how it died. Otherwise, they'll take penalties for trying to do anything in that scene. And I think that's really interesting, because it can add a lot to your story, but also you don't want to do things that just completely you should never do something that completely takes away from your party to progress the party's ability to progress the story.
Right.
Any consequence, any sort of thing that happens to them should all be in the vein of this is extra in addition to the thing that's already happening.
I have compulsions.
For your Nosferatu? Yeah, you would. You would have had to pick them.
I don't remember picking them.
Actually, I may be wrong. You may not have to pick them. I don't have the book in front of me. Hang on.
I have flaws, but I don't see any compulsions. I don't know. I have convictions. I might just be missing that step and need to add it.
Okay, you have cryptophilia. So for you, vampires become consumed with hunger for secrets, to know what few or no one knows, almost as strong as that of blood for blood. They also refuse to share secrets with others, except in strict trade scenarios for greater ones. That is very much to the vein of what the Nosferatu do, which is that they hoard secrets. And so, yeah, in Vampire, you do have these compulsions that the characters experience, and it really adds a lot to the story, because you can just, like, straight up throw something at them that they have to deal with.
That's based off your clan?
Correct. That is clan-specific.
Because I remember seeing that one with Jasper in LA by Night. There was a scene where he lost, he failed his role. He had a messy critical, I believe it was. And he needed to find out a secret from this particular person. He had to, even if it meant he was showing himself in public, he had to get that information. So it's interesting. I didn't realize that I had that. So now I know. Fun. Yeah. Awesome. It makes sense for my character, though, honestly. So,
yeah. And then, I mean, it really adds a lot to them as character or as vampires, because it kind of takes it over the edge of this is just my particular character and there's nothing special about them. The compulsions, the all these different things that your specific clan does really adds a lot to it. Same thing with the Banes. Like, the Banes are the things that always hurt you. For example, with the Ravnos, their Bane is that if they stay in the same place for more than one day within a 7-day period, they start to take damage.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, it really adds a lot to them and really makes the characters very interesting, kind of gives you this driving force. In the vein of LA by Night, there's also the situation with Victor Temple's character, who is a Ventru, and the Ventru's thing is that one of their compulsions can take manifest in the way that somebody has to obey an order from them, and that just comes down to the Ventru being this kind of blue blood group where they are the CEOs, they're the bosses, they're used to making the decisions and things like that.
Yeah, I think you see that at one point too. Mm-hmm. With Victor. So it was really interesting to see that. And it was kind of one of the reasons why, like I mentioned to you, but one of the reasons why I watched LA by Night was because I learn how to play games better by watching and listening to other people play it.
Mm-hmm.
More than I would learn from just like somebody explaining it to me. Because you could explain it all day, every day, but until I see it in action, I'm going to be like, what? What do I do?
Yeah. Yeah, I would advise pretty much anybody, if you know that you're going to play a game or if you want to run a game and you've read through the rule book and you want to make sure that your sessions go well, find some, you know, shows, find some podcasts of those particular games. And it really adds so much for your ability to play and run it if you can kind of see somebody else and get the feel of it. If you are like me, where you learn by watching and doing.
Yeah. I enjoyed, like, I did that with Savage Worlds too, because we have our Savage Worlds game starting Sound Control, and I watched Birdhouse Mysteries, free plug for Ellen, which is a fantastic show, and I like the fact that there are some new players there, because then they have to verbally explain what they're doing. And then I also have played it a couple of times, which has helped as well. Because then I was like, oh, that's what you mean by blah, blah, blah. That's what, okay, I get it now. So, like, I learned about the exploding dice and da, 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 and how that worked. But by listening, I was able to learn, oh, there's negatives when this happens, and there's positives when this happens. And you just get a feel for it. Because once you hit, like, 50-something episodes of the same show, you're like, you pretty much ran into almost everything. By that point, hopefully.
Yeah, and in a lot of actual play scenarios, if you start from the beginning, you'll have situations where players are still learning the system, and they may ask questions that you also want to ask, and it really adds a lot to your ability to kind of understand and be more confident when you play it.
I mean, it also helps when you just message the person. I'm like, so, which is what I've been doing with you.
Yeah, it's fine.
I remember when I was listening to LA by Night, and I got to the Victor Temple temple portion. There was one point I was like, so how rich am I in comparison to Victor? Am I like Victor rich, or am I like slightly less rich than Victor? or technology with the Camarilla, stuff like that. And they were just like, wait a second, that counteracts what we're doing. Hold on, question.
Yeah, and for our particular scenario, it's mostly just that you, like with anything, lore is just there to be a tool for you. And if you want to change things up slightly or make things a little bit different to make things more interesting for you, then go for it. Like, rule books are just guidelines.
Well, ironically, even in LA by Night, there is a Camarilla who is things that technology is good. Like, they use it.
Yeah. It's one of those things that a lot of them don't like it, but a lot of them are really old. So if they have if the Camarilla has people in it that are younger, they're more likely to be more okay with it, but they're also really afraid of the Second Inquisition. So it depends on how much they've interacted with that. But I mean, there are progressive Camarilla courts. Like, the one that is in New York's setting is really progressive, which you can find in the video games, the Vampire the Masquerade storybook games, or you can listen to Stitch of Fate, and they also play in New York. But the Camarilla that they interact with, a lot of them are pretty progressive, and I mean, you can have a very progressive court. I mean, in the New York setting, they have a thin blood primogen, which is completely unheard of in a lot of scenarios. But personally, I love that. I think that that's excellent, because it takes these characters that are normally seen as less than in a lot of scenarios, which I personally don't agree with. I don't think that you should have a character that's set up that way, but it does add a lot to the story. But these characters that are not as powerful as the rest of the vampires, and giving them a seat of power really adds a lot to the story and speaks volumes to the prince's values.
Right. That was kind of like one of the reasons why I wanted to play Nosferatu, is because it wasn't just like, I am still technically kind of a face character, but just like a behind the scenes face character.
Yeah.
And I'm so accustomed to playing, like, I can use my looks to my advantage characters for the face character. So it's going to be an interesting challenge to have two different personas, technically, like, behind the scenes on the phone. I'm going to be like, what's up? Like, I know my shit and I'm good at this. But then, like, once I'm in person, I have to hide. Unless I'm in the vampire court, then I'm going to be like, what's up? I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, vampires, for the most part, if they've been around for a little while, probably run into a Nosferatu. And some Nosferatu are really, really rough for the way that they look. But it all just comes down to however you interpret it. I mean, in the 5th edition core book, the Nosferatu that are presented there are not really that changed as they are in older versions of vampire, where they look more like the Nosferatu from the Black and White movie.
Yeah, I was looking at the pictures in the 5th edition book, and they weren't, like, super duper hideous like some of the pictures I found when I Googled it, which is kind of why I went with what I went with for my character's appearance. Like, it's still monstrous, and you can tell it's not a human, but it's not, like, complete, like, goblinoid almost looking character like some of them are in the pictures that I've seen.
Yeah, and that's really what it comes down to, is for the Nosferatu in particular, the thing that you have to accomplish is that your character has to be discernible from a human. Like, if a person sees you in broad daylight, it's going to be blatantly obvious to them that you're not human.
Well, if they see me in broad daylight, I'll be on fire.
Well, you know what I mean, like in lamp, in lamplight or something like that. But the same goes for the other vampires, like other, and that's something that LA by Night does really well too, is that using that blush of life to make the character seem more alive. Because if they're seen in a light or something like that, and you just walk up to one, they're going to look dead. Because they are. They're going to have gray skin. They're going to look like they're dead. And in some situations, they might even smell like they're dead.
Right.
So, but that again comes down to having a game that plays heavily into consequences for your actions and heavy politics and heavy social elements, is knowing how to carry yourself through the story. Because Vampire's not a combat game. I mean, it has combat elements to it, and you can certainly play that way if you want to. But the combat of the game is the politics and navigating your way through these different situations and dealing with these things that you deal with. Because again, you're facing horrible monsters, and it's better to talk to them than try to fight them.
Yeah. Like, people who survive, like, to become older generations are not the ones that went and confronted those that were attacking. They're pretty much the ones that are like, oh, no, I'm gonna stay over here. Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, that's very much a thing.
I am intrigued with how this the world will work, and because I am only listening to LA by Night, I'm seeing the Anorak side of you. I'm not seeing a lot of the Camarilla side of you. You see it a little bit more in season 3, but it's you're seeing the extreme side of it. You're not seeing like everyday type of stuff.
Yeah.
So I am curious to see how that goes, and I'm excited to see how it goes. When I originally suggested we went Camarilla, I didn't know anything about the differences between the two. I was just like, Camarilla sounds fancy, and we have a prince. And I was just like, that sounds fun. That's why I suggested it. But honestly, like, I think it'll be more interesting to have the politics of the Camarilla than it would be to have the constant fighting of the Anarchy. Mm-hmm. To a certain extent. I think the Anarchy side of it also has fun and entertaining interests, but it's more of a kill or be killed or eat or be eaten type of situation. But you get to live your life a little bit easier with less rules. So it just depends on what you want as a game, as a group, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that is very much a thing within the Camarilla, is that it is the vampire government. So they kind of keep things in check a little bit more. And the way that they keep things in check is that behind the veil, they have these super powerful vampires that could just like roll in. And if you are starting to act out and do something you're not supposed to do, there are genuine consequences. The sheriff could come up and just take you. And then you could stand trial for your actions. In some situations, it could lead to death.
Right. But that's why it's fun, because there's consequences. Because consequences make things interesting, especially when they're in fictional worlds, not in real life.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that with World of Darkness, it is as much like our world as it can be. But I mean, in a lot of situations, if you think about it, the way that they describe how the these monsters operate, we could be just like any of the other people, just going about our day and not knowing about any of this.
Fair. Yeah, fair. So I guess the rule of thumb on this whole thing is have consequences in your game. Don't just let people get away with everything, because sometimes it's better and more interesting of a story if there is a consequence in relation to what the characters do. And they can't just get away with everything. Like, for example, if you have a murder hobo party, don't just let them get away with murder hoboing. Eventually, someone's going to catch on that you're murdering a bunch of people. Eventually, someone. Like, what if there's some Sherlock Holmes-esque type person following the serial killer group, and you have no idea, and then they finally find you, and you're just like, ha, I found you. What are you talking about? You're the ones that have been killing all these people. But they were bad guys. It's like, were they though? Or are you the bad guys?
Yeah. And I mean, that's, if your party is established that they want to be murder hobos, that gives an opportunity to fight another person. So, I mean, that's perfect.
I love this stories where it's like, guys, are we the bad guys?
Mm-hmm.
Are we the bad guys or are we the good guys? Because I don't feel so good right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that's something that's in Vampire, is like, you're all the bad guys. There are a bunch of factions, but you're all monsters.
Kind of like that concept, though, because, like, you go into it, you're not supposed to be a hero, where a lot of games are like, you're the hero, you're the adventurer, you're the savior. So you're going into it like, no, you're a monster, you're just trying to survive.
Yeah, pretty much.
And survive to the best of your ability.
Yeah, and depending on what faction you are, that may present itself in many different ways. Like, if you're a Sabbat pack, you're just going to roll in and start murdering stuff because you are the apex predator, is basically how you view things. And I promise you that you are not the good guy in that situation.
Next character, Sabbat, go.
I mean, we can make a Sabbat game eventually. It would probably be very combat heavy, but we could definitely do it.
I just want to play a La Sombra.
You can play a La Sombra normally. I mean, do anything with any character that you want to.
They just, now that I know what they look like, I'm like, oh, that's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
The shadows. So, on that note, any other, I guess, words? Words are hard.
Closing remarks?
Any other, yes, closing remarks on consequences in TTRPGs?
No, I think it's what it boils down to is I personally believe that making your worlds live and breathe and making your characters live and breathe adds a lot to your story and makes it so that you can have these really interesting and really fruitful interactions, and they may not even be the character focus. Like, you could have all these characters that do all these sorts of things in the background, and it really adds a lot to the party because then it throws curveballs at them and makes them deal with situations and everything else like that. But again, this is all through the veil of they've agreed to do that, because just because I enjoy playing this game this way doesn't mean that everybody does. And that's okay, because in some situations you just want to have your Saturday morning cartoon game where you show up and you're this gigantic bear thing that rolls around with an axe and kills stuff. Like, that's cool too.
Yep. Communication is key. I mean, that's with any game. Always make sure that you are talking it out and ensuring that everybody is happy and comfortable and on the same page, because there's nothing worse than having one person who's looking for the Lord of the Rings game where the rest are looking for Monty Python. And that's just not a good mix sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that Lord of the Rings guy either needs to make a Monty Python character or GTFO. But anywho's it. I guess for my remark would be, have fun with it. Be fair with your consequences if you're the DM. Don't just go out of your way to target anybody. But also, like, don't just let somebody get away with shit over and over and over again. Eventually, it will catch up to them. They might be able to get away with it a couple of times, and you can give them, like, a warning because they're a new player. Hey, if you keep doing this, this is what the actions are going to be. But eventually, the actions will catch up. And sometimes they got to learn. And that might lead to character death. And that's the lesson.
Yeah. But as long as you've cleared that that's possible, go for it.
Honestly, always allow character death. It's fun. This should just always be allowed, because it makes things interesting. Even like this is coming from someone who has played four different characters in one campaign so far, and we're fourth level. It's fine. Like, am I a little sad? Sure, but it's making new characters. So that's fine. So, on that note, thank you for having this discussion with me. We will be bringing these discussions back a little bit more because we kind of got shifted to interview styles more so, and I missed the discussion. So we're going to throw in a couple of discussions again, at least once a month. And hopefully Alex will be joining me for most of them, but sometimes Alex will be busy. So that's fine.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Obviously. So with that note, thank you everybody for listening. I appreciate it. You can also make sure to check out our new shows that will be airing soon, Dice Before Dawn, where we will be playing Phoenix by Night, DM'd by the wonderful Alex here. And then our Sound Control RPG, where we will be doing Radio Signal, DM'd by Dan from The Last Tapestry. Also, as a note, I have a Patreon, so you should please check out that Patreon, and if you are able, please help support the show. We did add a new tier where you can get advertisements on my Twitter, and if you have a TTRPG that you would like to play, you can also have a one-shot played for and recorded and uploaded on my channel, so please give a look at that, and that's down below as well. If you want to talk to me, you can talk to me on Twitter at Beholder to No One or Dice Before Dawn or Sound Control RPG. Yes, all of the things. Keeping awesome. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.